This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 Saturday Magazine with Leanne and Jeff, and our guest has already been part of our program this morning, Lorraine Little, who we've spoken to in terms of the funding from the Out Games. I've forgotten what's the title of the funding.
Melbourne Out Games
Legacy Fund. That's the one. And we're going to just chat to you about your life.
Oh,
really?
Goodness, that'll be fascinating.
You're our first guest on this new first Saturday of the month segment we're going to have, profiling members of the community. So you're it.
Oh, I feel privileged. Thank you, guys.
Because I'm reckon a few things might have happened to you before you did the Out Games.
Oh, absolutely. As all people have in life, a curly-whirly kind of roller coaster ride.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
So, we're going to ask the obvious questions. Where did you grow up, Lorraine?
I'm a Mallee girl,
okay.
A country girl.
Out west?
In Swan Hill.
Okay, out west.
Yeah, so that was the first 18 years of my life, going to school and playing sport and trying to pursue an interest in the arts, but not with a great deal of success in a football-dominated country
Swan
town.
Swan Hill's very into its football, isn't
it? Yeah, and netball, which I didn't really like because it was so restrictive.
Can't hit anyone.
Well, you can't. No, not like that. I'm not like that at all in my sporting pursuits. I just didn't like the fact that you had to sort of grab the ball and stop and you couldn't throw it from one end to the other.
Yeah.
You know, dull.
Yeah. That's right. So what was it like growing up in the country?
Look, I think, it's one of those classic things that at the time, and probably particularly at the time that I was there, it was fairly dull. Mm. And particularly, as I said, luckily for me, I was good at sports. I come from a sporting family, and so I've got that genetic kind of makeup. But if you're also interested in the arts, it was really difficult to find connections with people who had that kind of thinking. So I played sport, but I didn't buy into the whole sport mentality, and because everything socially happened around the sports
the pub
clubs.
And the barbecue.
The pub and the barbecue and the beer, and I hate
and
that.
The boys.
And
it's
the
true,
boys would see, there you go, all those B words.
Yeah. In country towns, often it's like, well, what else do you do?
Yeah.
Because the arts are not seen as very
thing
to do in a country town. Well, what was your interest in the arts then? What kind
of... I had the fantastic classic situation. I had a fantastic drama teacher who, the poor darling, was sent to Swan Hill for a year on contract and had to look up the Melways to find out where the hell it was. And she was completely abused and misused by the school and by the students. And yet for me, it was finally this magic connection that I thought, here's someone who actually... I understand and feels like understands a little bit about me and what I want to be involved with. So it was drama, obviously, and that interest continued. So I did an undergraduate degree in drama.
So you moved to Melbourne for that?
Yeah, oh yeah. Look, I think at that time too, it was a rite of passage, you know, that generation, we had to come to Melbourne to go to university.
Yeah. Where did you do your drama degree?
Well, up at Melbourne University,
yep.
At the Teachers College, Melbourne State College, I think it was known then, and now it's had about five other names since.
Yeah.
And
Melbourne CAE and
something
else.
Yeah, that's right,
Tell us about, let's going back to Swan Hill, were you actively involved in drama then in the school? Did the town have a local theatre group?
Oh, absolutely.
Or?
My mother makes all the costumes for them. God bless them and her. and I'm not a big fan of musicals. And this is, again, the thing. Yes, it had a very popular music theatre group.
Yeah.
And the school pursued the school musical. But they weren't things I was terribly interested in now at all either. I don't like that. That's not my preferred form of drama and the arts. So, very little kind of
anything
outlet.
Outside that really sort of mainstream popular sort of stuff.
That's right. And, God, as I said, God bless them, and they put an amazing amount of passion and time into doing it. But, very little capacity to do something that was a little bit, outside that.
Did you have any like-minded friends that you could actually sort of talk to about that stuff? You could read plays and books together?
No. So that's what I'm saying. It was fortunate for me. I was good at sport as well because that gave me a social connection with the community. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I actually was. I actually played volleyball. I played all sports, but I pursued volleyball, and which is not a really common or popular sport. But I, when I was in year 12, I played in a team that was mainly made up of the teachers, and I was the captain of the team.
Bit of role reversal happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you the
toilet? So was it like getting to boss the teachers around? Did they
compliant? Well, you know, but. It's interesting. It wasn't about bossing because I had a strong connection with quite a few of them.
Yeah.
It started off with the drama teacher, and then the next year I pursued ceramics, pottery, because the drama teacher got booted out of the school. And so I had strong connections with these as individuals, and I felt like I actually related to them better than most of my peers a lot of the time.
So these female teachers?
Oh, yeah. Well, in year 12 it was the best because my English teacher, who to this day actually remains my longest standing and dearest friend, drove an MG. She was like the drama teacher, got sent to Swan Hill on contract because they were on scholarships or something
like
when they
bonded,
did it.
I think, to do country service.
Yeah, so the poor darlings, you know. So she rocks up with her MG and I thought, righto, I'm going to do English in that woman's class.
What was, can I ask you, in terms of the school experience, like with the English teacher and the drama teacher, what was the attitude of the students in the school to drama? Because my sense is country town sports big, but anything that's artistic or even anything academic is often really poo-hooed amongst the kids. I mean, I grew up in a country town as well.
And oh, whereabouts?
Moolumbah on the north coast of New South Wales. And I was actively involved in the local town theatre group. We didn't have drama at school at that stage. But I mean, my experience as a man was different, felt very ostracised around the sports stuff. And is it better being a woman in a country town in terms of fitting in with those sports things, do you think? Or are there problems on that side as well?
Are we talking as a woman in general or as a lesbian? Or
Probably more as a lesbian, but I suppose women in general because, well, no, I guess more as a lesbian. Like, is that, what was your experience as a lesbian girl?
Well, I was certainly a questioning lesbian girl in my growing up years.
Yeah. Most of us are questioning at
correct.
That stage.
I think you're right, Jeff. I think it's probably easier for a girl because if you're, you know, all those cliches, a lesbian, you might have been a bit of a tomboy growing up, so you've got that kind of athletic capacity. But if you're a guy, and I did have a gay guy friend in school, he didn't and wasn't interested in sport, didn't fit that macho community's expectation, and so I think it's much more difficult for a guy going through that phase or that stage of questioning and not fitting in with the mainstream.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, and our guest is Lorraine Little, talking about growing up at the moment in Swan Hill. What would you see, like, I think the biggest challenge for a gay guy is around sport and around that sort of macho image. What would you say is the biggest challenge growing up lesbian in a country town?
Not spending all of my time worrying about what I look like for boys not spending all my time just listening to trashy music.
These are good things, not bad things.
These are good things. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that again, having that kind of where do you connect with your peers was difficult because I didn't and wasn't interested. I'm still not.
Well, it sounds like you made your peer group a different group, which was the older people with probably broader experience.
Well,
people
who've been living and working in Melbourne who came up. I mean, and not to say, that's not to write off all of my I've got, there were very strong academic pursuits at the school as well. So I sort of straddled both camps because I fitted in there. I was strong academically and I was strong in sport. So it allowed me to sort of manoeuvre my way through what could have been a very kind of, very isolating and lonely childhood.
Yeah.
So do you think you made decisions or it's just sort of happened naturally? Is it sort of conscious?
Ooh.
Sorry, it's a bit deep, isn't it?
That's very deep for a Saturday morning. I know. I think you gravitate towards what you need.
Yeah.
And certainly, as I said, with the drama and an arts teacher and then the English teachers, I gravitated towards like-minded people, and fortunately they were open to having someone hang around who was some years younger than them, that was a very strong couple of years of my life where I really needed their support.
Mm. And they were there.
So I think you gravitate towards what you need. You do make a few conscious decisions along the way, but it's more innate.
Did you cop any flack from the other girls in the school who were trying to impress the boys, who were into, you know, the makeup and looking good and whatever and doing what the boys wanted? Did you cop flack from them at all?
Well, no, because as I said, I think in those towns and in a town like Swan Hill, academic pursuits were highly regarded, even in a state school, in the glory days of state education, where you actually could achieve that in a public-funded system. But also I was good at sport, so I had that, for want of a better word, kudos, I guess.
Yeah, you're up there. Were you a house captain or school captain?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got school captain type written up. I have to say, you look like a school captain.
Oh, yeah. And also, you know, my family were long-standing community pillars of the community, generationally across several generations. So it wasn't smooth sailing necessarily, but I had that, I guess, just strength of... Well, if you want to take it a lot broader than that, Jeff, I think it's all, for me, one of my driving principles in what I do, and I achieve it to varying degrees of success at any one time, but it's about being part of something beyond yourself as an individual. I can't fathom the idea of just pursuing everything about my own gain. I don't get that. Maybe it is, again, a reflection of coming from the country, that the dependency on each other was far greater. My whole family is a sort of community-minded family. You know, we had the monopoly on the royal show, on the local agricultural show at one stage.
Winning everything in all the prizes?
No, in terms of the organisation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, to me, about being part of a team is, being connected to things beyond my own existence.
I think true. Sorry, Leanne.
I was going to say, I think the parallels to sport are obviously there too, and that stuff about creating more than you can on your own, but responsibility to other people.
I think the thing with the arts as well, you know, that people who are really real theatre people, whether they're actors or directors or people who do the behind-the-scenes stuff, have a love of theatre and its impact and serving the community. People have the idea that, you know, actors are kind of these narcissists wandering around waiting to be applauded all the time. Mm. Some are, and some stars are like that, and some stars are hopeless actors. Mm. But the real, real theatre people are really dedicated, I think, to serving the community and to doing something that has an impact on the lives of people in a really positive way.
Well, hopefully.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, hopefully that's what motivates the arts and artists. I was actually at the VCA, the Dean, Professor Andrea Hull, is just in the process of stepping down after 10 or so years of being an amazing champion for that place. And so there's a whole, you know, she was in talking to us the other day, and she talked about the School of Drama and the people students who go there and the staff who run the place as always operating from a place of passion and generosity. And that to me is what makes it exciting and why I pursue working in the arts, even though it doesn't pay you very much.
No. Yeah. That's true.
And so it's that passion to pursue something that it enlivens you and enriches you, but in doing so, the ripple effect can be that you've connected to someone
and
else.
And sport's the same. You know, I've more than ever before, in watching some of the Beijing Olympics, had that real sense of the achievement and the drive that it takes. Like when I saw, I've forgotten his name, the pole vaulter. What's his name? The guy who broke the Olympic record and
Australian.
Got the gold.
Steve Hooper?
Steve Hooper.
Not bad.
Yeah. Just watching him and watching that kind of achievement and knowing, you know, it's not something I could do, but it was actually inspiring to me watching someone achieve something that seems so impossible.
Yeah.
And as a philosophy of life, you know, to take that on is quite amazing.
And that's why there are quite strong parallels. There are absolute parallels between sport and art. I don't buy into this divide that we try and have in Australia.
Yet it's very strong, isn't it, in our culture?
Well, I think the arguments they've been having post-Beijing about, you know, money and funding, going to the, you know, I heard the... head of the Australian Olympic Committee, saying, oh, well, there's probably people that, you know, have their taxes go to the arts who don't ever go to the theatre. And it's, hang on, it's not a competition around that.
Yeah, look, having said that, you know, as a sports person and an arts person, I don't like the dominance that sport has in this country, in our media, in our thinking, in our behaviour. It's just leaves me cold getting The Age every weekend and seeing pages upon pages upon pages about footballers. Or flying back in from Europe when I've lived there a few times, and flying back in and being greeted at the airport by all these big billers about posters about, you know, the ANZ or some bank, whatever, or some, you know, funding of the next search for the next Shane Warne or the next whoever. I'm thinking, wouldn't it be fabulous to walk back and see a big poster up saying, you know, blah, 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 sponsoring the search for the next Simone Young or the next Barry Costa.
It's exposure to the detriment of other things. It's like the fact that sports, there's not a problem, but the news at night, you know, big sports section, there's no arts section. And like, it's, you know, every night you get sports stuff. And
in
it's
Vienna.
Yes, let's get back to Vienna.
I'm jumping in on you, Jeff, there, but in Vienna, the national news, their version of the ABC news, has a 10-minute art slot every day of the week. It's not some little colour and movement story that we put on after the main thing and before the weather.
Part of a pet story, like the
pet story. Yeah, the pet story, the sob story, the sad community story or whatever, or the happy community story. It's 10 minutes of arts news, arts and cultural news, because that's embedded in their culture like sport is embedded in ours. Mm. And so, yeah, it's kind of...
And the other thing about the sports coverage that we get, it's all about winning.
And it's all about blokes.
And blokes, absolutely. You see very little of women's sport, except, you know, like if...
Well, except when we win the gold medals. And then in a month's time, or even now, where are the women in our sports pages?
Yeah.
Nowhere.
That's right.
Nowhere.
That's right. It's bizarre, isn't it? You're listening to Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. That's Malia and Solitude. That's the choice of our guest on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Lorraine Little. She's got a wonderful voice, and you were saying she's short and young. And
yeah, she's young and she's small, and this amazing voice comes out of her. The album is titled Yellow Daffodils.
Yeah.
It came out, I think, in about 2004.
Mm-hmm. Powerful voice.
Wonderful.
So, Lorraine, we got to off the track a bit, but interesting discussion.
Oh, how strange with me.
But no, I think it gives some insight around your passions and why you do what you do. Mm. So we know you went to Melbourne Uni, and we know that you've worked a lot in the arts arts area. So you're not a performer, but you love the whole thing. What sort of did you do after uni? And
well, I did teach drama for a couple of years, but I always knew that it wasn't going to be my lifetime career.
Because you had all these 18-year-old girls hanging around. Is that right?
Oh, not where I was teaching, darling. Oh, it wasn't pleasant. But I had a couple of really good years there teaching drama, but I'd always promised myself that I wouldn't stay any longer than when I started to hear myself become the teacher I never wanted to be.
Mm. Ah, yes.
But I taught in a really, really tough area out in the western suburbs, and you kind of had to become that person to survive it, and I just didn't want to. So I took a year off, and that's when I did the over to Europe. My sister lives in Ireland and has been there 20 or so years, so I was going over to visit her and called into Japan to catch up with a friend, and that's I ended up staying 6 months, went to Ireland, saw my sister, and had a job lined up in America, in fact, to help introduce theatre sports in schools, which is what I'd been doing here in Melbourne. And
it's a very physical thing too.
Yeah, well, it's impro-based, and in fact, it's a great activity or drama activity to get guys involved. But, you know, that's another story in itself. So, yeah, that was the overseas trip that was meant to be a year off, and, called into Vienna and didn't leave for a couple of years. Ended up cooking in a restaurant.
Aha, schnitzel, huh?
Nine. I'm you know, tick off the boxes with the vegetarian, you know, the lesbian, vegetarian, sporty dyke, so forth. But
any dogs?
I did have a beautiful dog, yes, with my a long time partner. Yes, gorgeous healer, Kelpie healer called Jutsa.
Jutsa.
Yeah, she was great. She's now gone to doggy heaven.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but she was my fave. Mm. Ended up being in Vienna for a good while, and that's been an amazing part of my life ever since. And I equally so, my sister being in Ireland, I try and get back to Europe every two or three years. Mm. My next trip will obviously be next year for the World Out Games in Copenhagen. Mm. And the timing is fantastic. I'll then go to Ireland for my sister's birthday. And I think probably it's going to be the first time we've shared a birthday. I've been with her for her birthday as an adult.
Oh, mm. How fantastic.
Yeah, it's the tyranny of distance of Australia, manifests itself in so many ways. And I just... You know, she's got four kids over there, and if you add up probably over the 20 years or so that she's been there, we've probably spent 6 months or 3 months mm. together in our lives, which is just mm. pains me greatly. But mm. I've made a couple of attempts at living in Europe, and I just can't, you know. In fact, last time I was there after the Montreal Out Games, I went to Europe, of course, and I have very good friends in Belgium as well, and they hosted a party where they invited every woman that they knew with a view of finding one of them to marry me so that I could stay in Europe.
Aren't they gorgeous?
Fantastic. The same women have actually I got an email from them the other day saying, oh, it's fantastic you're coming over next year. You know, when you call into Belgium, we would like to invite you to come to Champagne for a week with us. And I just sat at my desk, clapping my hands, which is a sign
Champagne
that I'm really
for
happy.
A week.
How hard is that to
What
take?
A yeah. place to go.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly.
Can we ask you, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Can I ask you a couple of questions?
And, are they curly ones?
One is just about your own coming out story.
Oh, okay.
And the other one is like what you're doing now and what's your passion for such involvement with sport. Can you answer all of that and anything else in about 3 minutes?
My coming out was just pretty... It was post leaving Swan Hill, obviously. So I'd been at uni for a year or two and got involved with a crazy girl down here. And, that was kind of it was a segue coming out, not a defined moment. And it was, I think, in all honesty, in terms of my mum actually being confronted by it, dealing with it, was when I bought a house with my then partner, and she wanted to come down and measure up to do the curtains. You know,
because she's doing the costumes and she can move on to curtains.
Oh, that's right. She's a great seamstress. And walked into the house and said, well, this is Jack's and my room and blah, 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 blah. And so she could no longer pretend.
The reality was there.
The reality was there. And she, you know, so that was really, I guess, formally it. So some years into it. My passion, what I'm doing now.
You're very involved, to do what you do with the Out Games. What's your passion for sport and for being involved with the Out Games? What fuels that?
Well, what fuels it, as I said before, is to contribute to something, to be part of something and contribute to something that's beyond my mere existence. Going back to Andrea Hull, the professor from Dean from VCA in her retirement, said she likes to try and live by the philosophy of thirds, and that's good because number three is my lucky number. A third of it spent for herself and her self-fulfillment, a third of it contributing to her community in what way she can, and for her it's the arts, and a third of it earning money. Now, that's a great principle, I think, if you can live your life by that. And I think you'll probably, at varying times, like clearly for me, the last 2 years or so has been much more community-based. But I also have a very strong notion that once this is over at the end of the year, I won't actually be directly involved with anything on a community basis for some time, because there's nothing worse than a bitter and twisted community volunteer,
burnt
is there?
Out, burnt out, no.
That's right. And so I did that. I mean, I was on the board of Queer Film for a number of years ago, but then I'd sort of disappeared off the radar for a year or two and spent a bit more time on me and my life and my friends. But, you know, for sure, with the legacy of the Out Games, I'm still involved, obviously, with the fund. That finishes for me at the end of the year. But I'm also on the steering committee with City of Melbourne for a project called Out Cities, which is a cultural program going over to Copenhagen.
Oh, okay.
So,
that'll be good.
Oh, it's a fantastic initiative, and it's a great pat on the back for City of Melbourne. My passion is really just to be part of something that does... things that are valuable. I think it's about being connected, giving people, community, the varying options to be connected, whether that be sport or arts or volunteerism. It makes your life a lot more fulfilling.
Mm. It's very satisfying, isn't it?
I've got one last question. What are your sports? What are your key sports you'll be...
Well, my main sport is volleyball, but I have said
that's
that...
That's because you're 7 foot ten.
I'm the short ass in my family, truly. And I have said, and I will now say it publicly, that Copenhagen should be my last major volleyball tournament because I've been playing it for a bloody long time and
the knees are going?
No, it's not my knees. It's my back's a bit dodgy. Uh-huh. And I'm going to take up either swimming or dance sports because that's the best chance of getting a medal. That's my experience from the
Games. Oh, okay. So
absolutely.
You're after a medal.
Oh, absolutely. I don't get the medal set.
Well, Lorraine, thank you for joining us on Saturday Magazine. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we could talk for another hour, really. We've only just touched
the
surface, which we
always do. Trey from North Fitzroy said, what an engaging and interesting guest.
Yeah. Thank you, Trey. I don't know you, but thank you.
We did check to see if it was somebody you knew.
No.
Lorraine Little, who's currently co-president of Melbourne Art Games, and what's your title of the Legacy Fund? Is it president of the Legacy Fund?
Oh, just the chair of the...
Chair of the Legacy Fund.
I don't have a real badge for that one.
Chair leg, they like to
say. Arts person, sports person, general good egg to have around.
Oh, thanks, guys.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.